This is CliffCentral.com.
In 1972, at age 24, George Zimmer was selling clothing out of the boot trunk of his car, traveling from Texas, Oklahoma, and Louisiana. By 1973, he and his college roommates opened the first men's warehouse, a clothing retailer selling primarily affordable men's suits. The men's warehouse grew to 1,200 stores across America and Canada. In 1986, 13 years after the first men's warehouse opened, Mr. Zimmer became his own spokesperson, starring in his own television ads. At the time, the economy was in collapse, and the brand was facing Chapter 11 bankruptcy. Mr. Zimmer's presence in those television ads were not accidental. They were in response to the tough economic conditions. He offered a promise that he believed would eat into the men's clothing market share. So in ad after ad, Mr. Zimmer would promise his consumers a guarantee, and that guarantee ran on TV, print, and eventually social media for 27 consecutive years. As CEO, Mr. Zimmer would stand tall, look directly in the camera, and with his trademark gray beard, dressed in fine tailoring, he would exclaim, "You're gonna like the way you look. I guarantee it." While Mr. Zimmer was CEO, at his peak, he had over 10,000 employees, and every single employee knew the story. The story was simple. Everyone had to deliver on this promise. Every customer had to leave the store knowing you're gonna like the way you look, because Mr. Zimmer had guaranteed it. Welcome back to the next episode of the Brain and Brand Show. I am your host, Timothy Maurice, and this is the show where we explore the link between people and brands, how people impact brands, and how brands impact the psyche of people. Today we look at the power of stories to take a brand to the next level. Have you considered what's your personal story and how it impacts your career? What is the story of your company or organization's brand? Is it clear? The more simple and clear your story is to consumers as well as employees, the more your brand will thrive in the complex economic period we all live. Today, I share with you a conversation from Tracy Swanepoel, an expert helping brands tell their story internally and externally. Tracy wanted to be a tennis pro, convinced she would win Wimbledon. She was redirected due to an injury, but now, as the best-selling author of The Leadership Riptide, she, along with the brand she consults, are still winning championships. Enjoy.
Ended up on a scholarship. You had to be feisty. You had to be strong. You had to be intellectually engaged to be able to outmaneuver and so forth. Tell us what that taught you.
Well, you know, I often think, you know, if you're not the, I wasn't the most talented physically. I wasn't the biggest physically.
Like Serena Williams. Imagine against Serena Williams.
Exactly. Please, that would be really ugly. Don't imagine that, Tim. I always think of it as, you know, I had to outwit rather than out-hit my opponents. And I think, you know, a lot of the stuff that you sort of have to think about when you have to win a tennis match, you think about in business. You got to think, you know, what makes you different? Where are their weaknesses? How can you capitalize on them? So I think, you know, tennis taught me a lot of that kind of stuff. Also a lot of discipline, a lot of planning.
Let's talk about the book. You broke down the book in three phases: defining FutureCo, creating FutureCo, and escaping the riptide, the harmony way.
Yes.
What I liked about the beginning of the book, you've structured this book very well, by the way. I've published four
Thank
books,
you.
So and I appreciate the publishing process. It was really wonderful to get Alec Hogg to do your foreword, because he put a very strong statement in the front, and I thought that was really brilliant. But in your introduction, you set the stage by talking a bit about your story, and you sort of began the book really getting people to sort of think about, you know, the value of the future, the value of the future, and thinking about. But you also believe in beginning with the end in mind.
Exactly.
Tell us why.
You know, I think that in order to create the future, You have to imagine it and paint it in such detail that it's almost like you're living in it. Because then you look back and you can say, well, these are the things that I need to do. It's so clear. So I think, you know, in doing this, what I wanted to do was, you know, it's very easy to break down stuff. It's very easy to criticize. But what I want to do was say, I'm saying, you know, I think we need to have a different look at the way that we lead. But then what is it that we should be creating? Let's kind of blank page it, you know, let's have a look at that and see that it's actually doable.
Let's look at a gap quickly between leaders who are not leading the right way and the leaders who are leading the right way. Okay? Mm. So let's paint a picture of the leader who's not leading the right way and the leader who is leading the right way. Mm. And then let's go back into the book quickly. So the leader who's not leading the right way, that's a person, for example, who, you know, it just simply is not engaged with their employees. Mm. They're not listening. As you talk about in the book, what are some other things that the leader who's not leading the right way? Let's paint that archetype.
I think that a lot of it has got to do with not being conscious that you're actually a leader. I think, you know, there's a lot of people at the tops of companies that have got the title, the reserved parking spot, but haven't really thought of themselves as, what am I doing actively, practically today to connect with my employees? You know, and it's not, I don't want to even be critical of that, because I think our system is about, you know, we promote the most technically able person to the top of the system. So, and those technically able people, the best mechanical engineer, the best CA, they're actually great at what they do. But they get to the top and they're like, oh no. I mean, I've often had chats to these guys and they're like, oh no, the people stuff. Well, thank goodness there's HR for that.
Wow.
You know, how can I sort of get rid of that that little bit? So I think there's that, you know, for me, it's not even that they are deliberately bad. It's just that they're not consciously good.
Got it. And oftentimes you're right. And they put even salespeople, high performance salespeople, they'll put them in CEO. You're like,
yeah,
this guy is great as, or she's great at sales, not leading.
Yeah.
So you wrote this book for these people to become more conscious and to escape the riptide.
Yes.
Let's talk quickly about the riptide. A riptide is like in the ocean, it can sort of wash you out to sea type of thing.
Yeah.
But escaping that riptide, why do you use that framing? So let's talk about, you know, you got this bad leader who can sort of escape being pulled out to sea.
Yeah.
Okay.
Basically, you know, the riptide in my head, the image that I was sort of seeing in my head was that when you're caught in a riptide, you swim and swim and swim frantically.
I see.
It's not like there's not effort going into it. And a lot of that effort is what I term management. It's all the management stuff that we do, the performance management stuff, the incentives, the compliance. But, you know, you look up when you're in a riptide, you look up, you look at the shore, and you're no closer after all that effort. So we're not getting anywhere. We're not getting closer to bridging that gap of disengagement. I mean, 87% of the global workforce are disengaged, and that's a tragedy.
Wow. And that makes, I'm glad you painted that picture, because you're right. And what ends up happening is people find themselves in a situation where they look to their leaders and they go, we also caught up in this riptide.
Yes.
None of us are moving anywhere.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Got it. Okay. So let's talk about the ideal leader. Okay, who's he visioning the future? He's engaged. What else is he doing or is she doing?
I think a big thing is authenticity. And I think that that's where storytelling is such a valuable tool, because stories allow you to share a bit of yourself. And I think that's a vital thing for the ideal leader, is to actually be okay with him or herself enough to say, you know what, I'm not perfect. I don't know everything, but I can help with this and this and this. And I think those authentic leaders, there's an automatic pull to them. And I think sharing stories that aren't always the good success stories are the way to be real,
wow,
you know, just to be who they really, really are.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking to Tracy Swanepoel. She's the author of The Leadership Riptide and How to Escape. And we are exploring the notion that you can sort of build your brand by becoming more proactive, engaged, and conscious leaders. And one big part of this is understanding the power of story. But before we get into the power of story, In the first part of this book, you really inspire people to sort of engage with themselves and listen to themselves.
Mm.
And before you can listen to others, you got to listen to yourself. How do you go about that when you've got, I mean, you're married, you've got, you know, do you have kids?
Yes.
You have kids. Yep. You've got a life and you've got a lot of stuff happening. How do you get to a space where you can start even listening to yourself?
You know, when I was writing that bit, I almost didn't want to go there because it sounds so shoo-ah-ish, you know, listen to yourself. But, you know, that's the way I think about it. It's the conversation that you're having in your head. It's the thoughts. And I think that what I think is really important for leaders to do is to engage with that. I find it really helpful to write that down. I'm a writer, although the blank page still terrifies me. But it helps me understand what I'm thinking. I actually read recently Barack Obama spends 3 hours a night writing his thoughts down. And I think unless you have that kind of discipline, I hate to say it, but we're not actually thinking. We're just going through the motions, going through life. We're not actually stopping to really think. Another way of doing it is to have someone that listens to you, a thinking partner. Some people think better when they just speak. My husband's like that. He always says, how do I know what I think until I've heard what I've had to say?
Sure, sure.
So if you've got somebody that listens to you, a thinking partner, that's really good as well.
And you mentioned that some of this sort of listening happens on date night. How important is date night?
Oh, date night. Well, it's an institution in our household. And again, you know, I mentioned it to also give the message that sometimes you have to have a routine. I mean, as I say in the book, some date nights are the ultimate. You know, you share, you sort of come away with, you know, inspired, in love, understanding who and why you are. Others, when you're totally exhausted, I mean, we sit there on our phones catching up on emails.
Yeah.
We like call for the bill before an hour is over. We arrive home. Zach hasn't even gone to sleep yet. But it's okay.
Yes.
Because
you went.
We've got the other ones.
Yeah.
Yes, so,
exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, so wow. That's awesome. And, people carving out space, prioritizing these moments. I guess that's a big part of it as well. You know, talking about brand purpose, you talk a bit about the value of purpose.
Mm.
And one of the things that comes through very strong in the book is the idea and the notion that it must be sort of a bigger reason for doing things.
Yes.
So take us through it. How do you discover your purpose? Because purpose also sounds very sort of...
You can say Shiwa.
Yeah.
I agree. For me, I take it back to the practical. You've got to wake up in the morning and you've got to get out of bed and there's got to be a great reason why. A lot of the language that we speak in business, I'm afraid to say, falls very short of that. I mean, I don't get out of bed in the morning, you know, thinking about the ROI, my KPI, all of those acronyms. I can't even remember them. So I think, you know, part of connecting with people, part of leading people is to give them meaning. People are craving meaning. I mean, there's a reason that Martin Luther King said, I have a dream, not I have a KPI.
Exactly.
I think the language that we speak is really important in that regard.
And that's where, I guess, the power of story comes in, right?
Yes.
You start thinking about the story and for me, a big moment in the book for me that stood out, and I didn't know this, was that Jeff Bezos,
yes, yes.
Doesn't allow PowerPoints.
Yeah.
You have to write it down, your idea in narrative form.
Yeah.
Have you seen that really work and be highly effective?
Yes, I have. I think that, you know, I have a love-hate relationship with PowerPoint. It's a great sort of escape route if you don't really know what you want to say, because you can put a couple of bullet points down and you can kind of make it up as you go along. But if you really need to think through something, I mean, you as a writer know, when you write, it disentangles your thoughts. I mean, when I write a first draft that's absolute nonsense, but at least I've got that out of the way, because then I can actually know what I'm thinking. And I think that's an incredible discipline that Jeff Bezos instituted, to say you actually have to think. So it's not necessarily the not the PowerPoint, but it's please think about what you're doing and make the links.
Which is more difficult to craft that narrative.
Exactly.
But you use this idea, this sort of analogy of building blocks. Take us through the sort of Lego building blocks and how that links to story building.
That, you know, really what inspired me was that Nathan Sawaya, The Art of the Brick Expo. If anyone's seen that, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. But what really just stunned me is, you know, you've got the building block of the Lego block, and you see what this guy does with it. He makes art. And for me, the analogy was, you know, our world is made up of words. As leaders, words are our currency.
A sentence is like little blocks.
Exactly. So we've got to actually create more than just a word, a word, a word. A Lego block, a Lego block. You know, PowerPoint bullet points. So we've got to weave them together, paint mental pictures for people. And that's where when you start to get to the level of inspiring meaning, helping people understand purpose, it's really leaders' currency is words.
Before we go to the break, I want to get some free consulting from you.
Okay? Oh, I'm not allowed to do that, sorry. You told me I'm allowed to do and say anything. But not that.
For Cliff Central, I'm gonna put you on the spot. So Cliff Central needs a story, right? We need a bigger brand purpose. So we're gonna all put a practical case study on the table. Mm. Let's look at the blocks. Digital platform.
Mm-hmm.
Innovative.
Mm-hmm.
It is, but the data is quite expensive,
mm-hmm.
right? So you got the data challenge for some people. For some people, it's no issue at all. You got the potential of being global,
mm-hmm.
non-regulated, so you can say whatever you want. SABC, these type of people can't say anything about it.
Yeah.
You've got bold, incredible voices
mm-hmm.
that are, you know, highly engaged. It is the first of its kind in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the Southern Hemisphere. It is award-winning globally.
Mm-hmm.
It is emerging as the go-to platform for uncensored, raw content where no one can sort of control what we say. So these are some of the blocks.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about how do we start putting together the story.
Oh, now you have put me on the spot. Thank you. Okay, just off the top of my head, you know, I think that what always for me the main thing to get your head around is what's different.
Yes.
And Cliff Central is totally un.
Yes.
If I had to just quickly frame it, you almost have to enhance that difference by starting off with, you know, in the past.
Mm.
Where have we come from? Look at this environment. Look at all this other stuff.
Okay.
Then something happens.
You set the stage.
Because the thing is, that actually showcases how different you are.
Got it.
Then something happened.
The contrast moment.
There was, exactly. Something happened. Something, you know, big. It was, you know, regulation or not, or there was more censorship, whatever. So.
The Guptas.
Yeah. You said it. Okay. Look, I want to carry on living in this beautiful country, so I'm not going to say
it. Oh, my God. You can come home with me.
So, yeah, you know, so now, and then obviously it's to focus on and entrench your difference. And then I think the key part of that story, imagine if that go into the future, what would the world look like if Cliff Central had to take it over?
Got it. And then we have this sort of roaring sort of future code moment where we take people 5 years from now. Because
exactly.
5 years from now, when data is like nothing and everyone is online listening, we
yes.
are boom, done. Wow, how much we owe you for this?
I'll send you the invoice. I never like to talk money in a public place.
Awesome. We're chatting to Tracy Swanepoel, author of The Leadership Riptide and How to Escape. I'm just imagining Gareth out in the middle of this riptide running around, and now he leaps out of it after he got this sort of story strategy. When we come back, we're going to go into the second phase of the book, a defining future code, a little bit more about the story dynamic and how to craft your story using sort of techniques from the book. We'll be right back.
I am a South African. I carry the hopes and dreams of my country and the generations to come. I know that it's not where I come from, but where I'm going to that really matters.
At Sibanye, we believe the future of our country will be defined by our actions today, which is why we are committed to the development of our leaders. Sibanye, we are one. Visit us on sibanyegold.co.za.
Unbranded on cliffcentral.com.
Welcome back to Unbranded. I'm Timothy Maurice, and we're chatting about The Leadership Riptide, a new book by Tracy Swanepoel, who's a writer, a thinker, co-founder of Thinkspiration. Tracy, tell us a bit more about Thinkspiration. I really like that title, the framing.
Thank you. Well, it really is a made-up word, as obviously you know. And it really, the idea behind it was to capture that there's got to be thinking, but there's also got to be the inspirational part. So putting it together in one word was really the thought behind that. And what we do is we help companies take their strategy, convert it to a compelling story, visualize that, and leadership use it as a tool to change the way that they lead in the company.
And you've worked at very sort of senior level in terms of your sort of strategic advisory sort of capacity with like Harmony and so forth. Did you, I mean, there were moments when you had to sort of, you found yourself in a sort of a Bond girl mode.
Oh my goodness. You see, I read the end of the book. Yeah.
And that moment where I think Bernard was going into a meeting and you had hugged someone and you realized that they were actually wearing a mic.
Yeah.
And you had to sort of warn them. It did feel like a Bond movie. But that's how it works in high-level stakes. Mm. I mean, people don't realize, you know, big mining companies, I mean, the world sort of evolves around what happens at those companies. And the leaders really do matter. You know, working at that level, I mean, you've had to learn a lot. I mean, and you could see that you didn't just sort of take this book. You know, you read a lot of books. Mm. And you can see somebody's just sort of Googling stuff and cutting and pasting. But I felt that the raw experience of this book is where your real value is.
Thank you.
But were you ever scared?
Writing the book or doing the stuff?
No, both. When you're sort of advising on that sort of senior level where the stakes are so high.
You know, I suppose it's a long time now, a long time ago, so I can be truthful. When I first started working with Harmony, I had just done my MBA, and I was convinced that there was a different way of doing internal communication, applying the principles of marketing, of branding, a lot of the stuff I learned in the advertising world, to the internal audience. So I wrote my dissertation. It was all lovely and theoretical. And then I really was looking for somewhere to sort of, you know, pilot it, do the first one. But of course, you know, when you're interacting with clients, you convince them that you've been doing this for years.
Sure, of course.
So
absolutely.
Harmony, you know, just at that time, very maverick company, fantastic, brave leadership team. And they had identified engaging with their people as a key thing.
Okay.
They had been through many, many acquisitions. They knew they needed to get the guys in Valcom to be as engaged as they were getting the shareholders in New York to put money in. So so Harmony were sort of gung-ho to do all this stuff. And talk about, you know, being sort of a bit fearful. I was just going, well, I hope some of this stuff actually works. But it was that kind of company, and I was very honest. I said, you know, some of this stuff will work. Some of it will work fantastically. Some of it probably won't work. But they were really keen to try it. And, you know, in that kind of environment, that's where you make progress. That's where there's real innovation, because you don't feel like failing is the end of the road. You actually feel like failing is the next step to success.
Your background, coming from Ogilvy, one of the most powerful sort of, you know, sort of branding sort of organizations in the world, sort of the father of branding, sort of pioneered this space. The link between branding and leadership is. I mean, you can't really separate them, right?
Exactly.
And some of the work in terms of the getting leaders to understand that and understand sort of the internal brand versus the external brand is fundamental. Mm. Your ability to get people, or your ability to sell to the Harmony team, your need to sort of go on a listening journey.
Mm.
Was that a difficult sell? I mean, you said that they knew that they needed to connect, but the time that it took, because how long did it take you to go on this sort of listening journey?
That process was probably about in all 3 months.
Oh, okay.
So it was, and I mean, we sat and interviewed, it was a team. I was part of a team. We sat and interviewed probably about 100 or more people from all levels of the business, you know, from rock drill operators to miners to metallurgists. That was one of the best things that I think I ever did and that you can ever do. You know, sometimes a new CEO will, you know, somebody that's new in the job will say, you know, what's the one thing you think I should do? And I always say, just do that.
Really?
Go listen to your people. Because after that, you just understand the company from inside out.
The heartbeat.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, going back to your point about branding, using communication, influencing as part of your leadership role, you cannot take people with you until you understand where they are. You have to go to that conversation, the ones that they're having in the change houses. As much as you don't really want to engage with that stuff and you want to tell them they're talking absolute nonsense, you have to go to where they are and then start there and bring them, deal with those contentious issues, talk about them.
Wow.
Then people are open to actually following you to the future.
Hey, you did some wonderful work. I mean, you said you had come home one night and you didn't typically watch Larry King. But it just so happened to be on, and you got this sort of light bulb moment, and you went back and you created the sort of Larry King effect. Take us through how you sold it. Because I'm trying to imagine you sitting and sharing this idea with people, and they're going, what? You want to do an interview? You want to do what? How did you sell it?
Well, you know, first it was, would it work? So it wasn't really selling the concept. I actually did it in full before I took everybody through it. Because, you know, sometimes you can explain something as a concept and before people have really seen it as a reality, they're not quite going to understand it. So basically what happened was one of the key issues that came out through the listening sessions was people didn't have a really solid idea of what the Harmony Way was. They were interpreting it as everything, you know, it was just all over the place. So we needed to cement those ideas. And then we had a session, the top management team and myself, and it was one of those, you know, lots of ideas, and it was great, but it was like, how are you going to capture this in a way that people are going to get it? And that's when, you're right, I sort of mulled on it for ages. And I guess one of the things that I believe in terms of being creative, is just let it rest sometimes and go and do something else.
Yes.
And that's when you get that's when you get it, you know? So I was like at my wit's end, scanning the TV channels, and that's when I suddenly got the idea. And then I just wrote it up like that. After I'd seen the logic of it, I wrote it up like that. And then when I presented it to the team, it made sense to them. I mean, there were one or two people that were slightly aghast at doing it like this. But generally, they got it straight away.
And you use a Time magazine cover.
Yeah.
And basically, the Time magazine cover sort of highlighted the interview.
Yes. So the idea was that, firstly, it took place 5 years in the future.
Okay.
Hence, you know, the idea, paint the future in such detail that it feels like it's a reality right now. So that was the idea of the cover. You know, Harmony had made it to the cover of Time magazine.
Yes.
This is what the headline looked like. And then the interview was a discussion, a conversation between the CEO, Bernard, and Larry King. And what's great about that sort of question and answer format is you can interrogate a strategy from all angles. It's not a flat, one-dimensional thing.
Yes.
You can get Larry to go, well, you know, that's not making sense to me now. How do you go about this? Which is what a lot of people in the company would have been saying.
And you would have only been able to know how to craft this because you had gone and listened to the people.
Exactly.
So you're filling a gap. I get it. That makes so much sense. If you're just tuning in again and you're a little bit late to the show, hopefully you're going to go back and listen to the beginning. We're chatting to Tracy Swanepoel, author of The Leadership Riptide and How to Escape. She's already given us strategy, which is why you have to go back and really sort of fundamentally understand how to escape this riptide and get off this sort of treadmill of leadership and get into a place where you're fully engaged, fully conscious, and so forth. Where would you recommend people start in sort of developing a storyline within that organization? And who starts this? Like, you know, within an organization, does the CEO on the Exco team, you know, the CEO is often so occupied with just the politics of running a business. Who should start this conversation? If you were able to distribute this book to every major leader in the country, would you start at CEO level? Where would you start?
Absolutely. I think the, you know, the area of strategy is fairly and squarely in the CEO's office. The CEO needs to have that picture in his or her head of the business, not just where it is now, but where it is 5 years in the future.
Okay.
And then it's about actually articulating that. But the key part of it is to also, while, I mean, there's a CEO, a leader, needs to be able to deal with ambiguity. So you've got to be in the future, and at the same time, you've got to be with where your people are, because that's what your job is as a CEO and as a leader, to connect those two.
Got it. In terms of marketing the message and the story internally, and the importance of using creative visuals, I mean, you've used sort of cartoons and this type of thing. Let's talk about how images, in terms of internally marketing the story, how powerful is it, and what are some ideas and things you can use?
Images are incredibly powerful. You know, the good old cliche, a picture speaks a thousand words. And what we do is we actually take a story, an analogy, and we put it on one page. We visualize it. What that helps to do is when people are looking at one picture, suddenly in the discussion, you find out, that isn't what I thought that was. Oh, that isn't what I thought innovation was. That isn't. So you really get people to understand, get a shared understanding. Secondly, very importantly, the picture provides, I mean, I call it the big picture because it's the context. A lot of people in companies are completely bamboozled by all the stuff that's happening to them. Suddenly, tomorrow, there's a new performance management system. Then there's a change initiative. Then we're somewhere else, you know, looking at innovation. Then there's this. And there's never a sense of how all of those things fit together. When we visualize a strategy, we put it on one page, suddenly it all makes sense. And once you've got that context, you can then add anything to it. You know, it's like the overall plot line of a movie.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
You can have the subplots, but you've got to have the overall plot line.
Wow. And one of the things that I found really interesting is that you are comfortable enough because you've had this sort of experience and your background and understanding branding as well as leadership. You are comfortable enough to really sort of go there and really sort of share sort of raw sort of insights. And part of the book I really enjoyed was about the value in playing and the value of play. You know, for sort of stiff executives who are not used to playing, how do you sell them on the notion that they need to play more?
Again, and I don't think there's one way of doing it, I think you've got to create the environment where they feel more relaxed. So I don't think it's an intellectual sell. I mean, as you and I know, there's all the evidence in neuroscience to say, you know, play is actually the way to go. Play is how people engage, remember, all of that good stuff. But I think it's about creating the environment. In the one of the conferences that we are involved with, the Joburg Indaba, we use a little, in one of the segments, we have a little Mythbusters, you know, from the TV show Mythbusters. So it's Mythbusters in the mining industry.
Okay.
And just by calling it something different and just by creating a different sort of way of people interacting, they suddenly, you see these like stiff upper lip lawyers, like just speaking it. And, you know, then they kind of come to us afterwards and go, oopsie, I might be in a bit of hot water back at the office. But you've got to create that environment. And I think also, you know, the visual strategy maps that we do, when people see a picture, they see there's an analogy, it gives that message, you know, maybe subconsciously, it's okay. It's okay to have fun. Imagine if. That's the side of all of us that we need to bring more into the environment.
Let's talk about your work, your process. Let's go back to the Cliff Central analogy. If you were going to work and do some work for Cliff Central, take us through how you go about approaching your work. Would you call a meeting with Gareth or the CEO and want to sit down with them to begin sort of a research phase? How do you begin when you're going to work with a client?
I think the first meeting is about meeting with a CEO and really seeing if there's a meeting of minds. Because if the leader hasn't got appetite for this, it's never going to work.
Okay.
But having, once there is that, then it's really the first thing that we do is we listen. And then what we actually do is we give that feedback as, you know, all companies want it in a nice PowerPoint analysis. but it's not actually for analysis purposes. We visualize that feedback so that the leader can have a conversation with his company to say, guys, this is where we are. Sometimes we call it the fat mirror. You know, this is kind of, or the real mirror. This is kind of how, where we really are. Because that is the first point of connection.
I see.
Once the leader and the rest of the organization have had that conversation, then it's about, you know, and obviously then it's about where you want to be in the future. We take that, we conceptualize that as a story, we visualize it. And then, you know, a lot of times people will say to us, oh, can you do a picture? It's not a picture. The picture that eventually comes out is really a tool for a different way of engaging people, a different way of having conversations. And sometimes leaders are not used to that. And I'm talking at all levels, you know, the next level and the next level. So we work with them. We create some a little facilitation manual, some training, just to get them comfortable. But what you find is when you, once they see what it's about, they can
yes,
do it.
Got it.
But again, it's just giving that signal that it's, that's okay. What's required.
I'm going to give you one last challenge, okay?
Sure,
embrace
free
yourself.
Consulting, hey?
embrace yourself. Because I feel sorry for these Samsung people. I the most fascinating thing about Samsung, I was on a flight from Boston to D.C. or somewhere recently, and the flight attendant screamed at this one woman who was holding a Samsung. Mm. Literally screamed at her that she cannot have this phone on charging because it could blow up the plane. Now, this thing created chaos on the flight.
Yeah.
And I can imagine this woman would never want to hold another Samsung because that emotional, you know, so taking the story of these things that are blowing up and catching fire and so forth, you know, I'm not going to put you on the spot to a port, you know, because obviously I don't really care about Samsung. But the point is that going from having a story like that, if you're the CEO of Samsung and trying to recreate or reinvent your story, what are some general tips on reinventing a story?
Okay, so, well, thanks for that.
Anytime.
Nice one.
Anytime.
And he doesn't even give me coffee to be able to do this. You know, the stories that are out there about a brand or, you know, within a company, they're not always good stories. Actually, more often than not, they are what we call the anti-stories.
Oh, okay.
Now, dealing with an anti-story, often the sort of good old rational left brain people go, we need the facts now. We've got to put this right with the facts.
Mm.
And the sad thing is that facts don't actually overcome a bad story. Only a better story overcomes a bad story.
I see.
If you want to, a really good example of how Steve Jobs dealt with a similar kind of situation, when he was launching iCloud, there was all the noise around Mobile Me and it wasn't going to work. And so the tip is go to the anti-story. Go right into where people are thinking. So if you Google this on, wherever, you'll see how Steve does this. He's an absolute master. He goes, you may be thinking whatever that negative stuff is.
I see.
And you're right. I call that the mea culpa moment. Yes, you may be right. We did mess up. But
the phone did blow up.
The phone did blow up. So go to where people are. You know, so Samsung, you know, go right to where, you know, probably when you've got on a plane, this might have even happened to you. And it's happened to a lot of other people. And you're right. But this is what we now.
This is the bigger story.
This is the bigger story. And watch out. This is what you need to look out for. So that's the little, and I mean, that Steve does it like, you know, like
and
the master that he is.
You did this without coffee. I'm so impressed, Trace.
I tell you, I'm going to get coffee now.
Trace, we only have a couple more minutes, and I feel like this time just sort of flew by. But I want to bring Rhiannette in. Rhiannette Lebowitz is a sort of resident cyber health. She helps people thrive online. And I want to talk about quickly the value of the virtual space in building stories. So in terms of companies having an intranet and some sort of internal sort of site and how they can use the internet to help with the story building, to build the internal messaging, the internal branding. What are some thoughts? Riadette, welcome back. It's good
Thank
to see you, again. So, you know, we've been talking to Tracy about her new book, Leadership Riptide and How to Escape and Using the Power of Story to Build Your Brand, Rally Your Team, A New Way of Leadership.
It's fascinating.
Let's just talk quickly. What are some of the things that we can do to build, from your experience, Riadette, just understanding internal, using the internet to drive stories?
Well, I think if you connect with someone's value and your purpose for your business, then there's already, you know, that connection. And then I really loved how you said it, you know, the authenticity and so forth. But from a practical point of view, luckily there's so many. And what's quite interesting is how many companies are moving away from email communication through to instant messaging communication type platforms.
And video.
And
amazing.
Video, yes. So it's really quite, from a communications expert point of view, it becomes more challenging because you can't just put the, you know, a quick email together and expect everyone in the company to not read it because they don't open those mails.
Yes.
You have to be so crafty. Mm. And I think it's also about not just focusing on those platforms, but bringing in combinations like the posters, the interaction. Maybe there's even interactive artists to take that story and message further.
Exactly. You know, if you look at how creative we are outside of the office, I mean, just look at those Saxon World Shebeen memes that have been flying around Twitter. I mean, people are just so creative.
They
but
are.
When they walk into those office blocks, it's as if the human button gets switched off. And I think that we need to just create the environment where people, where we just like we are outside, you know, using WhatsApp, Instagram, all of that stuff that you talked about to share things that are really happening.
Do we need like a director of memes now in companies? Someone who can just come up with like super cool creative stuff. I mean, it's amazing how effective it is.
Do you want the job, Timothy?
Yeah, I think I should apply for it. You know, it's interesting because, you know, you're absolutely right. People are so creative, but then they get into the office and I don't know what happens. But these memes are effective. They drive the messaging. And everybody ends up knowing about the Shebeen thing.
Yes.
Right? Everybody will know about it precisely because of the memes.
Yeah.
Like I saw one where there's these two sort of guys looking under a pothole to look for the Shebeen.
Yes.
But that thing sticks in your brain.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, just imagine if you had you know, sent out the good old memo from the CEO's desk rather than that.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, just contrast. So I feel like we need to get some tips from out there and bring them into organizations.
That's powerful. That's powerful. Tracy, you have been absolutely phenomenal. Thank you so much. Thank you for writing The Leadership Riptide and How to Escape. Thank you for surviving as a Bond girl and you know, in the harmony, your harmony experience and learning and taking what you've learned and share it with us. Tell us about your future. One of the things you would like to see in Tracy's world 5 years from now before you go.
Oh, and again, no coffee, Timothy. You know, I really would love, you know, it's one thing to write a book and it's another thing to make it real. So I would love to, that future co that is really easy to write on paper, I'd love to see more of that. I'd love to help leaders create more of that.
Okay.
I don't think it's that difficult. I think there's some very simple things that leaders can do, but I'd love to be involved in shaping the thinking around making work something that we all love.
Got it. You can follow Tracy at TL Swanepoel, Swanepoel. And your website for Thinkspiration is?
www.thinkspiration.co.za.
Awesome. All the best out there. Keep inspiring people. Keep helping build brands and take them to the next level. And I'm sure we're going to have you on again soon, hopefully.
Thank you so much for having me, Timothy.
Awesome. In 2013, the board of the Men's Warehouse fired George Zimmer, the very founder. According to reports, he wanted full control and the board wanted a new direction.
He was not just the founder and CEO. He was the story. The Men's Warehouse is still trying to figure out what its new story is. Thanks for listening to the Brain and Brand Show. Please share with thinkers and creators all around the world. We'll be back next week with the next episode.
This is CliffCentral.com.